Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming. We are really excited to have Tim Dorsey here tonight with the 15th, the 15th book, which is a great thing. And he is on a long, long tour, which I was going to feel sorry for him, but then I realized it culminates in a cruise that you can all sign up for. Out of Tampa. Oh, which is should be very exciting. And his website has the best stuff. You know, you can get all kinds of t-shirts and a wonderful picture book. So I suggest you go there. And you can, the books are on audio, too, which is wonderful. Okay. So I'm going to... I just am thinking that these books would make a much more interesting TV series than CSI Miami. So so let's welcome him and hear more about this wonderful character, Serge. Okay.
Well, let me start off. Great to be way up here, drinking lots of water and everything. I usually do a lot of, I guess, word's getting around. People hear me talk, and they, I do a lot of after dinner talks, you know, banquet speaking, and you know, rubber chicken circuit lunch stuff, and that's usually where somebody's heard you, and it's like some sort of, you know, consolidated widget company or something's having a trade show and they want an entertainment thing. And so like 5% of the people know who you are. And you get up and you start talking about all this weird Florida crime and stuff and Surge and killing people with weird devices. And they're like, who's booking these things? You know? So when I, when I'm in a bookstore like this and I see people with like Surge hats and things like, and that I got here early enough that I had time to talk to quite a few of you. What I like to do, instead of going by a standard script and doing shtick, which you don't want me to do in this kind of room dynamic, I like to see if we can kind of start rolling off each other. Because usually when it's something like this where people know the books and they've taken the time to come out, you know, in the cold, maybe it's normal for you, it's very cold for me, that people want to talk and ask questions and stuff. So let's see how that goes. I will call on people. You can raise your hand. Seriously. Go. Yes.
How do you write in a non-chronological order with the character staying the same?
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. it's true. When I wrote the first book, I didn't think it was going to get published. And then I had a prequel. You know, I had Triggerfish Twist pretty quickly. And the reason was I got – I really didn't think – I thought it was going to be a practice novel. And so I just kind of – well, you know, I mean, I was trying to write and I was just – I kept writing chapter one over, and I kept editing myself. So I said, just write a whole full-length first draft. And it was, you know, it was really rough, and to be honest. But I said, just do that, because what you're doing isn't working, this whole trying to have it be perfect as you go. And so I said, just write it, and then you'll learn from it, and then you'll move forward. And so when I did that, you know, like I said, you know, I never anticipated it all being published. And so when I started throwing in all the crime from – my journalism days, you know, I kind of went overboard and I killed off like almost all my characters, and then I got a multiple book deal and I needed them, so I had to like bring them back, you know, and I had to do some really crazy things to bring some of them back, and as you saw, you know, I brought in Lenny, which is, I was kind of lucky because, you know, killing off Coleman right away, I brought in Lenny, which you could see was filling his shoes, because all of a sudden, oh, got to have the second book. And so, because that was the dynamic between Serge, you know, and Coleman, you know, he needs that foil to play off of while they're road tripping around. And so, you know, that's how I ended up doing the chronology the way it was. The second part of that was... is the first two books, they're chasing the briefcase. And I just got tired of that. I said, I don't want to be like, you know, the briefcase guy, you know, they're chasing that around. And so I just put that down for a while. And then I got enough readers who kept saying, you got to finish it. You got it. So the briefcase trilogy is like books 1, 2, and 5. So, as you can see, you know, I followed convention. But any other?
Two and five is following convention.
Yes, exactly. Over here.
So how do you feel about the fact that Surge is so popular and maybe has a more interesting life than you?
You mean, do I feel jealous I'm not a serial killer? No, I mean, I'll just sit back and write him and cash the checks, and he can run around and my kids are asking, you know, how old, because, you know, my oldest daughter just started high school, so I've allowed her to start. I said, when can I read them, Daddy? You know, because they sometimes come to book signings and they hear people talk about Surge and their favorite murder methods, and they're like, what the hell? What is this? What's, you know, since this invisible man named Surge is paying our house payments, and they've heard, you know, they've come to a lot of events, and they already know it's really weird. And so my oldest daughter just started reading them, and she's just started in the fall in high school, and she really likes them, but she knew that I'm crazy like this anyway, you know, and so she wasn't too surprised. And the thing is, I was going to wait much later, but in every generation, it's true. It's like, oh, kids are far more advanced. No, they are really. I mean, my wife and I have overheard stuff that it's like, holy cow, you know, we didn't know about that till we were 30, you know, or something like that. But anyway, you know, like in the old days, like she's got like she gets some extra juice from the books, you know, because it's like back when, you know, and the boy that had access to Playboy, you know, he would bring it to school and show it around, and, you know, and the kid would be popular. And so she brings my books into school saying, read this. And the kid's like, holy crap, your dad wrote this. So she's trying to, you know, help my readership base. Yes? Other?
Speaking of murder methods.
Good. This, you and the you. Good. I want to line them up. Yes?
Speaking of murder methods, how do you come up with an idea?
That's the hard part sometimes. I mean, now, you know, life's going good, and I have a family, and I'm really enjoying myself, you know. But two things is, you're going to think I'm facetious, but I tell my publisher, you know, or, you know, we talk about our demographics, and if you look at my audience pictures on my website, if you read the books in a vacuum and you didn't look at my website, you'd think, okay, you know, his audience is going to look really weird, you know, whatever. But no, I mean, if you look at the pic, they're very middle America. It's like, and the thing is, it's my audience, the people that are that this is resonating with, are the people who are basically, you know, like saying, I feel so guilty. If you told me I would have liked a character like this, I never would have believed you, and I feel guilty rooting for him, but I do because, and basically, if they go on and explain it more, they say it's like the society is disintegrating, and yes, Surge is guilty, he's a criminal and all this stuff, but he has this underlying moral code where he hates, and it's like, you know, we go through life, it's like the rule breakers are winning, you know, and like they're just, you know, the death of courtesy, you know, common courtesy in society. So anyway, but that's my audience, you know, the ones who, like, we keep on doing the right thing, you know, and just being civil, you know, the fabric of the neighborhood, you know, and these people keep, you know, crapping on our heads. And so it's, so basically, you know, but you don't get engaged with them, if you know what I'm saying. You know the type of people where, and I can't tell you how many times my wife has been with me, and she knows when I am like, you know, on DEFCON 5, my head's about to explode, is I just won't say anything. I'll just go stone cold. And she, you know, then it's when these jerks, you know, you just run into them here and there. And we all do. And you can't answer them because they have lives that you just, they're going to go their own way. And, you know, the smart thing is not to get entangled with them because they're losers and they're going to just, you know, self-destruct anyway. But you walk away and it just grinds in your stomach. Well, now when it happens to me, you ask where I get the ideas from. Because I'll go out in public, you know, and go about my daily chores, and someone will piss me off. And now I'm euphoric because they just gave me a whole bunch of money because I just go home and, you know, and I got my ideas. And they will actually, I'll be going home, oh, I'm going to do this to them. And so I have. And if nobody's pissing me off, then I just go to Home Depot with a notepad and I walk around and I honestly do. I did that. I've done that for several books where I'll walk around and I'll like I can use that, and I'll just jot it down. And so that's how I come up with the ideas. I know it's, and also I had a lot of hobbies as a kid, you know, so I kind of tried to incorporate things that I learned. I was very big. I was doing science projects when we didn't even have to do them at school. I would just do them at home because I was really fascinated by building stuff, and I would launch model rockets and stuff. Raise those hands. Who's next? Yes, over here.
If they were to make a show or a movie, do you have any favorite actors to play Colvin or Serge?
I mean, anybody. I mean, I'm selling fucking hats. I mean, just make the movie, you know? I'm not going to be choosy. I'm not there yet. I would just... I'd be just thrilled, you know, and I know it would, the main thing it would do, though people do ask about, you know, what about your creative control, pick the wrong actor, and it's like, you know, it's still going to raise the profile. I think enough people know, you know, about Hollywood, you know, it could be a good movie, bad movie, whatever, but it'll, you know, it'll introduce more people to the books. But the reason why, you know, I'm facetious when I answer like that is because I have a specific physical type in my head, which that goes through all the books. In other words, it's one of the things that I do when I write is the books are very visual to me. And I have to, like, run a movie through my head. I have to concretely visualize everything in the chapter. I mean, just see it and think about it. Because if you don't and you write it, you're phoning it in, you know, if you just kind of brush through it. If you haven't sat and like, you know, and even stuff that doesn't even end up in the book, like, you know, you look, okay, there's a door over here, there'll be a window, there'll be, here's this, here's the street, and here's, and maybe about, maybe 25% of that will get in the book. But and a lot of it, though, it's like the tip of the iceberg, like Hemingway talked about. If you read that, and it's like, okay, you talk about Miami, and there's this bar, and it's got, like, this tarpon on the wall, and this and that. If you have life experience, you'll fill out the rest of the iceberg, you know. So, anyway. And there was a yes. That pops up once in a while. There are no plans, but like for example, in the Stingray Shuffle, he came to New York briefly, and that was so that he could take the train back down to Florida because Henry Flagler and the history of Henry Flagler's Railroad opening up Florida.
Big Bamboo added a lot to my trip to L.A.
The Big Bamboo. Yeah, that was... I actually went to all those places. Ford Ullman was a real producer at New Line who bought the rights at the time they had it. And so I made him a character in the book because he told me... I went out there I told him I wanted to do something on the movie industry. Oh, great. And so, you know, he and the co-producer, we went out and me and my friend, we rented a convertible. And he helped me get around to a lot of the places in the Big Bamboo. Because I can get around to Florida places, but I had a whole laundry list of places to go to. I really did find... I mean, on top of the list was that, and they don't even take charge cards. Nobody's there. It's way, way up past Burbank. I wanted to go in the restaurant that is the scene at the beginning of Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs, where they're going around, they're doing that dolly shot around the table, where they're talking about, you know, tipping and, you know, other stuff. And so I went there, and we sat at the table and had tuna sandwiches. And that sort of thing makes my life. I'm enjoying myself. It's kind of like quiet, like death out here. But yeah, no, seriously.
Do you have any of the celebrities or people that are there that they realize who you're talking about in there? Like, let's say Bubba, that know who we're talking about.
I don't know who you're talking about. I have no idea whatsoever. I had somebody come to one of my signings though, and came up to me, and I actually turned slightly red, but he waited until everyone else was gone, and I didn't see that he was there, and he walked up, and he said, "So I see you had a little fun with me in your book," and it was Florida's last governor, Charlie Crist, and he came up he came up to me while he was but he wasn't governor yet at the time. This is several books back. But he came up to me while he was running for governor, and he won. He was attorney general, and he came up and I turned red because he's just like hey, a little fun, and he just let it lie there, and we're both thinking the same scene, you know, because what it was I had. He did this thing where, you know, just, you know, big Law and Order type thing to make a lot of publicity. He brought back the chain gangs, you know, which kind of strikes a chord out there. And so then in the book, so I had I changed his name, but everybody knew who it was. And I said, you know, he brought back the chain gangs, and then he followed it up. His next big, you know, push was in a valiant stand against tax and spend liberals. He steadfastly refused to fund the chain gang program, and so then all the chain gangs were put out on the side of the road, and the chains never arrived, and they escaped in the woods, and he's standing across the table, and I'm like, oh god, and so the guy's got a sense of humor. He goes, I thought it was funny, and he gave me a bumper sticker. I swear to God, and so, you know, I'm a fan of his ever since. Yes, over here.
There's a bookstore in Tampa that says that your life is not very quiet in reality.
What bookstore is that?
Haslam's.
Oh, no, that's because their life isn't very quiet in reality. No, what do they? Do they have a sign or what?
They just keep, every time I go there, they tell me more stories about your latest encounter, or you and several other authors have been known to get together and enjoy yourselves.
I'm really blindsided. Unless you're talking about Randy Wayne White, is that what? Oh, okay, there's not several authors. There's one author, and it's Randy Wayne White, and he's a degenerate liar. There's so many things that go back and forth between me and Randy White. Do you know who I'm talking about? He's Randy Wayne White, the Doc Ford series. He's a great author, a great friend of mine. And if they're telling stories, those are true. And and what happens is we get together, but like he does, for example, he hasn't done it at Haslam's because they put my posters up too high, but because we tour around the same time, and if he ever gets to a bookstore before I do, he'll like deface my posters, you know, and he'll draw stuff on them and write insults, and I thought it was just because, you know, we're pals and stuff, but what happened was I was over in Palm Beach County and at a bookstore, and they said, oh, you know, Randy's so bad, and I'm like, what do you mean? And they said, well, James Hall had a sign. James W. Hall is another of my favorite Florida writers. He had a signing, you know, and we had Randy was here, and James was coming in about a week, so we already had a display of all his books. And Randy went over to like a whole stack of books, and I forget what he said, but he said like he wrote in a whole bunch of, you know, I don't read this crap. Read Randy, you know, on the title page. Where so when James comes and opens it for the readers, you know, read Randy Wayne White instead of James, you know. And so what I did was, and this is one of those things that is so serendipitous you couldn't put it in a book, but. At that same signing, I hadn't noticed it, but the person came up at the end, and I looked, and I said, I saw a display of Randy's books, and I said, does Randy have a signing coming up? And they said, oh, yeah, he's going to... And then they looked at me like, oh, and I go, oh, yeah. And so I went and I grabbed a big stack of Randy's books, and it was, if you know his Doc Ford series, it was for a 12-mile limit. I went through the whole stack on the title page. I wrote, should have been 12-word limit. And but we go back and forth, and he writes, you know, he writes all these stuff on my posters and different, and like, there'll be like things that I'll have posted, you know, they'll sometimes put permanent pictures up around, and he'll write stuff about I should be on Ritalin or whatever. And it's just we have fun. We kind of carry on, and we're actually another weird phenomenon is we're signing each other's books. In other words, we're both, you know, in other words, people will come and have my book signed, and then they'll bring my books to his signings, and vice versa, because they know. Well, did you read Electric Barracuda? How many have read Electric Barracuda? Or I'll do something about that in a moment. Let me see what other questions we have right away. Yes.
How does getting your stool at Captain Tony's rank among your honors?
That, That was better than a Pulitzer. That was Captain Tony's is the original Sloppy Joe's. Where's Hemingway? That was where he his first watering hole down there. And so because I've mentioned a lot of the history, the Key West Town Square hanging tree is, you know, before they built the building, they built the building around it, and it goes right up through, you know, the ceiling, and there's all kinds of history in that bar. And so I put that in some books, and I know the owner, and I'm who bought it from Captain Tony, and I've met Captain Tony, and we talked, and I took down asked a bunch of questions, and I used the actual quotes in the book, but then the owner of Captain Tony's, I didn't know they were going to do it. They have stools, all like notable people who have been to Captain Tony's. They have two hanging from the ceiling with like chains, like 12 feet up, you can't get to, which is like Hemingway and John F. Kennedy. But like around the bar, they'll have like Al Pacino and Tennessee Williams and who else? I'm next to Sean Connery. And Wade Boggs is on the other side, and so I've got my own, and you know, everybody's making a joke every time I say I have my own stool. Anyway, I was just completely tickled. So I went down there, and you know, there's like, I don't even know how if I'm pronouncing it. Is it geocaching where they go around? Yeah. Well, I did my own kind of version of it where I took something and I stuck it in an envelope, and then I covered it with duct tape and I stuck it under my chair, you know, in Captain Tony's, and then I Facebook, you know, first person who can get to my chair, you know, check underneath, you know, and rip the duct tape. And so what it was, it said, take this to, the Key West Island bookstore, which is the historic bookstore in Key West. They have all the famous authors who've signed photos around. And so I had a little of just a potpourri memorabilia, signed memorabilia bag of various stuff that you couldn't get, you know, elsewhere. So you know, and basically all these people were, you know, and all these comments on Facebook were like, you know, I'm calling my relatives, I'm trying to get, you know, and so finally it took about like 24 hours, finally some guy made it and he got it, and he goes, I beat you, you know, and so he went over to the bookstore, and, you know, I just have fun like that on tour, you know, it's a lot of fun. Man, it's so quiet, come on, this is a happy, huh? No. I mean, do you have a specific thing in mind, or I'm sorry, I play off of things like that. But I will do a reading. But if I can pick out my own spot, because I haven't practiced anything, I usually go and just kind of, you know, tell weird stories about when I'm on tour. And well, want me to tell some stories?
Yeah.
Like you're going to say, you know. any other questions right away? Before? Yes.
Serge is an expert in everything. What research do you
have? I'm sorry, did I insult you? I won't point you out. Don't be embarrassed. Go ahead.
He's an expert.
I don't care. I don't have a job anymore. Go ahead. He's an
expert in everything. And how do you do all the research?
It's actually, I just go back and fact check, and you know, because it's stuff that I've traveled around and done stuff, and I remember the stuff, but then I come back, you know, later on, and you know, and I'll put it in the book just off the top of my head. But then, like on the second draft, I gotta go and make sure I spelled this right and the street is the correct spot. But it's mainly it's like. The stuff that he spouts is the stuff that I kind of do in my relaxing spare time. But, okay, let me tell you. You want this story? Okay. This is, I'll tell you a few that, this was one that happened, hold on. Getting a little dry here from. Talk amongst yourselves like this inside. Seriously.
I'm coming back.
Okay. You get compliments in the strangest ways. This was one of my favorite. I was at a library, and it was after the signing. and I was finished, and people were, you know, they were leaving, and I was thanking librarians, and the doors, there's a long hallway with these two glass doors, and they burst open, and this young guy comes running down the hall. This absolutely happened, gospel. Comes running down the hall, and he's got a book, and he's, you know, all out of breath, and he runs up, and he says, "Oh, you know, because you know, I thought you'd be gone. You know, I'm glad you're still here. I really wanted to get my book signed, you know." And he's just like panting, and made such a big entrance. So we're just listening to him, and he says, "Yeah, I thought I would finally make it, but then right at the last minute, you know, about a mile from here, I got pulled over for speeding, and the police officer said that I was going 20 over the speed limit, and you know, I wasn't wearing a seatbelt." Which I don't know if that's an extra fine here, but that's an aggravating thing. And so anyway, so and he, according to the guy, he said that the officer gave him like some attitude kind of in the window, you know, like, "Hey, buddy, you know, where are you going in such a hurry?" And he said that he said, "Well, I'm trying to get to the Blake Library. There's this author that I like, you know, named Tim Dorsey." And he said the cop took a step back and he goes, "I love Serge. Let him go." Seriously. There is an officer. I was in Houston, and I was taking. I'm going to take a group photo, but I was in Houston, and I was taking a group photo, and I noticed, because I noticed there was a police car that was in the fire lane, like right out, because you know where you would stand and speak at this bookstore. Here's the front glass of the front of the store, right? And there's a police car parked like right, you know, right behind me, and you know, so I was going to take a picture of the whole group, and like right over here, like right where that corner is, there's a police officer just kind of standing there, you know, I'm giving my talk the whole time, and so then, and I talked for like 45 minutes or whatever, and so then at the end I was going to take the picture, and so I said, "Okay, everybody, you know, kind of squeeze in because they're kind of spread out," and I'm going, "Why don't you get in the picture?" And he goes, "No, that's okay," and then I'm going, "No, seriously, why don't you get in the picture?" And he goes, "No, I'll just," and I go, and I swear, I said, "You're on duty, aren't you?" And he goes, "Yeah." You had to come to my, there was no other way. So, you know, he was making sure the store stayed safe. But, gosh, oh, the best one, well, I won't tell the best one yet. I'll save it. But, gosh, what was, this one was just, this one was priceless. I was at the West Palm Beach Library. They've torn it down. It was one of my favorite libraries. I went there as a kid. And there was all of these people looking this way. And the thing was, it was in a common area. It was one of the older libraries that didn't have conference rooms and speaking areas. And so what happened was everybody was facing me. And then, I was the only person who could see this. And as a public speaker, the people who were running the they were sponsoring at the bookstore, they asked me, they said, "You're usually, you know, really kind of comfortable and just really casual talking. But, you know, in the middle of your talk, what happened? Because it looked like, you know, we were going to get you some water or something. You got flustered or we thought you were having maybe choking or something." And they said, "But then you recovered. What happened?" Well, this is what happened. I was the only person who could see this. Everybody, all the rows of chairs are this way, except the very last, there was one last row of chair behind everybody else, and it was facing the other way because there was a bank of computers. All these people were watching, you know, they were on the computers. And so I'm telling stories, and I wasn't even paying attention to them, but something accidentally caught my eye. And what happened was, as you talk, you look around, you know, the audience as you're going. And I look, and I just, it just happened to catch my periphery. I'm looking over, and there's this young guy on the computer, and I catch, it's like this giant close-up. I mean, it was porn. I mean, it was just, and I'm like, "Jesus," you know, and I'm like, you know, just like they start stuttering, and I'm not into porn, which, and I'm not being defensive. It, you know, if you're trying to do a public speech, once you see that, you can't not see it, you know, and so I'm like. I'm like trying to tell the story. I'm trying to. I regain composure, but like I'm looking over here, and then I'm like over here, and over here. Through the only time I really thrown off balance. So then, so anyway, but the funny part. A week later, I had been doing. I was on tour, so you usually do bookstores. So every once in a while, I do a library. So I did about six or seven more bookstores, and then I was at a library. and it was up in Brevard County, and I wasn't even thinking about it, but I was in the library in the middle of talking. I go, oh, library. By the way, the last library I was at, the weirdest thing happened, and I tell them the story, and part of it was because librarians were there, and so I asked at the end, you know, I said, you know, I was surprised on another level because I thought that you had software that firewalled that stuff up, you know, and they said, you're right, you know, we have programs that filter out, you know, you can't get, you know, adult content, you know, it's blocked from our library. And so, anyway, at the end of the talk in that library, we're going along, and the book's been out maybe 2 weeks, you know, so there's a long line of people, and they all have the exact same, you know, the new release, and we're going along. Everyone's got a book, except right in the middle of the line, there's this young guy, no book, he's got a pen and paper, he goes, what was the name of that library? I tell him, takes off. He just flew. Driving to West Palm. You know, just. So, any other questions? Yes, back there.
How old are your kids?
They're 15 and 13.
How do they deal with your infamy?
They think it's just such a goof that, you know, that their dad does something, you know, very unorthodox. And what they'll do is from time to time they'll bring home books from their teachers who want autographs. So hopefully that'll help their grades. But no, really, the schools they're very kind. That you know, they have me. I talk to some students, you know, from time to time, English classes, and it's a lot of fun doing that. Yes. I just want to keep eating, you know. I mean, seriously, it's you gotta go, and I mean, I've reached kind of a mid-level sort of, it's above a cult but below, you know, James Patterson and Janet Ivanovich. So, you know, I'm just gonna and people ask, you know, you gonna do something else? But I if you notice, I have ensemble casts, and I now that I have so many books. And I have this population, I can bring people in and out, and I can mix it up. And so I can kind of do a lot of different things within the series now that I've introduced enough players, you know, and I have, you know, this multiple plot threads that, you know, end up getting fused by the end of the book. But until then, you know, so I can also play with different, you know, types of writing styles, like, for example, you know, the military sequence in like Orange Crush, totally different style of writing, you know, and other things like with Mahoney, you know, the noir, which I'm going into like Mickey Spillane type writing, you know, that sort of stuff. So I get to it stays fresh to me that way. So, yes.
Where's City and Country come from?
I don't know. I said, you know something, I need to do something for the college guys, you know, and so I get so many emails from college guys, you know, like, are they going to be in the next book, you know, put them in the next book, and so anyway, I needed to have something, I needed to have some people who would give Serge a run for his money, you know, as far as, you know, in his sort of, you know, his level, but, yes. I wish I.
Who does your cover art?
The cover art's the graphic arts department at HarperCollins, and so the best thing I can do is stay out of the way. But as far as the titles, I wish I did have a method. They're very important, so I do work on them. But I have files of various things that I. I'm sorry. I'm writing a book in my head as we're talking. I'm thinking about something else. But I have a file with a whole bunch of nuggets or whatever, and then at the bottom, I'll have like various names of characters, first names, last names, and then also have title ideas, you know. And so, like for example, the next book, I haven't completed it yet, but it's going to have Riptide in the title. But I don't know what I have some ideas. I don't kind of like the full title yet, because. I go both ways. I mean, if I have a good title, you know, like this one I had it before, you know, but other ones, I'll just have a working title and I'll change it at the end. Like, so it's going to be Riptide, but where it it's going to be like beach season down in Florida, and Serge, you know, tries to explain the Coleman, you know, and other people, you know, and he likes this because he says, you know, most people, you know, they don't know about riptides, and it's very dangerous, but if you really know what you're doing, it's like a really cool free Florida theme park ride. So he's out riding the riptides, woo, and then the lifeguards are yelling in megaphones, and he goes, it's okay, I'm having fun, you know. So I shouldn't tell this for the podcast, but anyway, I don't care. If you need to come up to me later, because I'm pretty good with Photoshop, because like I said, I put these on the website. Here's another great book tour story. I was at a library in Florida, and I'll try to disguise this as much as possible, but this, I went there two years in a row. It was like 08, 09, I think. And this couple came up to me before the second event and said, oh, yeah, we were here last year. We had a great time. We came back. And, by the way, we got married since we saw you last time. And you're we have you to thank for getting married, you know. And I'm like, well, they're being over-complimentary because some people, you know, people are very nice and gracious when you're on the road. You know, it's like how people, you know, they have – interests in common, they read and discuss the same books and watch the same classic movies on Turner or whatever, you know, and that's how they, you know, kind of get together. And they said, no, you literally are the reason we got together because we were here last year and we had a lot of fun. And you know, and it was, and then you got out your camera, and it was all a big, you know, it was all a bunch of, you know, fun silliness, you know, and so, you know, you took the picture, we were waving and everything, and then you put it up on your website, except we were married to other people. And, So they got busted. I was like, I felt terrible. I was like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. You know, and they go, no, don't feel so, you know, we love you because you move things along for us. So, let's see. Does anybody have Electric Barracuda? Does anybody have a? Yes, somebody's got a copy. Like, I'm doing a reading now. If you're, I'm going to do this. I've never had that happen. I feel so bad, you know. It was just a gag, you know. Gag. Just okay. I'm gonna do a reading now. Here's one of the things is that my publisher says, you know, we've seen you talk, you know, and you're really good and everything. You know, you have a rapport and you have, you know, kind of an at ease, you know, up in front of people. You know, you need to do readings, you know, because, you know, we're selling something. You know, if we just saw you and you didn't know anything about what you do, you know, we wouldn't, you know. So, and here's the thing is that I don't like to do readings, and I know other authors who don't like to do readings. And the reason why we don't like to do readings is because we like to do readings. And what I mean by that is if you ever got if you ever became an author, it's because you were inspired and you were, you know, by the people that you held, you know, in awe, you know, all the great authors that made you want to write. And so you know, if you're going to read a passage, you know, you're not going to necessarily read, you know, like a little action sequence or whatever. You're going to pick like the prose and the word craft that where you're trying the hardest to sort of emulate, you know, the people you're inspired by. Now, my muse, if you know the books, underneath everything, the real star is the state of Florida and my love of it and all the history. I mean, I you know, want to make it entertaining. People say, you know, we kind of see how you sort of sugarcoat the history lessons. And you say, we learn so much without effort because, you know, you add Serge being funny and all this other stuff. But so what I picked out to do a reading on is a location in Florida. It's a place called Cabbage Key. It's off of the Fort Myers, Lee County area, and it's a mangrove island. And on top of the, it's you can only get there by seaplane or by boat. And it's got a Calusa Indian, like 2,000-year-old shell mound on top. And it's got this rustic, like around 1915, they built the writer's, you know, vernacular wooden residence on there, and it's now the Cabbage Key Inn, and so, but you can't, you know, stay in it anymore because it's historic and the fire, so you stay off, you know, in other little places around it. But anyway, it's a great place. It's got a great restaurant, perfectly preserved like the way it was in the 1920s or whatever. And so what I do when I have, you know, in the books, you can probably tell it's on purpose that I have Serge, you know, running from authorities. And the coolest places, you know, to escape to, you know, are the coolest nooks and crannies around the state. So that's kind of a pretext, you know. So what I did is I have Serge and Coleman there on the lam. And let me find the page here. So they end up, Serge knows the way out there. They end up out at Cabbage Key, and the authorities lose their trail. And the thing is, so Serge is, what they did is it's the heat of the day. They're alone in the bar. It's a very small bar. They have the two stools on the end. And Cabbage Key, it's got all the elements. And this is what, it's got the history and the geology, and it's got, you know, magnificent tropical foliage, and it's got wading birds. And I've been out there. It's amazing. I mean, we take the boat out, and you see dolphin jumping next to your boat on the way out. And on the changing tides, the pods of dolphin will herd, you know, mullet and various fish. And then there's the history. And so Serge is kind of getting in the history and his love and what a magnificent place of Florida it is. Now, I discovered it. We'll go back to Randy Wayne White, the infamous. But I had to give him a nod because I was down at his house, and he lives right near there. You ever been out to Cabbage Key? And I said, no. And he goes, let's go out. So we took the boat. We spent the day out there, and it was a great time. And he hangs out there. He's a fixture out there. So that's part of the scene. And so what I had to do is give him, you know, a nod and give him a shout out. So in this what I'm going to read here is Serge and Coleman talking. He's describing this wonderful slice of Florida. And then this kind of masculine guy comes in and takes a seat at the other end of the bar, sits alone. And over the course of the afternoon, every once in a while, somebody will come up with a book to have signed, you know, and they'll come up timidly, and Randy will, you know, nicely sign it and smile, you know. And Serge knows who it is. He's not bothering him because he doesn't want to bother him. But Coleman doesn't know, and he's like, sees these people getting autographs. So he asks about, you know, what the deal is. And so that's where I'm going to start. We're out in Cabbage Key, And again, this is one of my favorite passages, and I hope you'll just allow me to indulge myself, and maybe you'll enjoy it on the same level that I do here. "Who's that guy?" asked Coleman. "Randy Wayne White, the famous author," said Serge. "This is his turf, so please don't do anything to embarrass me." "Yo, Randy," yelled Coleman, "your books suck. Thank you very much."
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.